weekly Grace Church podcast is going to try real hard to make your midweek just a little more enjoyable. My name is Tyler, and today we are jam-packing this pod with Christmas. We're talking Advent with author Maggie Johnson. We're talking new Christmas tunes with worship dudes Brad, Becky, and Will Johnson. And we're going to dig in to learn more from Barry about his sermon this past weekend. But first, let's quickly check in with my favorite co-hosts, Marin and Barry. Hey, guys.
Hey.
What's up, Tyler?
How you doing?
Good.
Good weekends?
Great weekend.
Yeah, it's a great weekend.
Great. Barry, you spoke. We all know kind of where you were this weekend. Well, yeah. If you didn't go to church, you probably don't know where he was. But he was speaking, so that's what your weekend was. Marin, what were you doing?
For the services, for Sunday, I was hosting in Fishers.
How'd that go? The first time ever?
Very first time ever.
Great.
Hosting. Completely different from singing.
Did you freeze?
No. And that was my fear. Like, I didn't want to...
Yeah.
Scripted or rehearsed, but at the same time, you don't want to forget all the details, setting up this, setting up that.
That was going to be my question. Did you drop any balls? Did you remember everything?
You know, for the most part, yes. I think there was just one time where I think I was setting up baptism and you have all these things to remember to say. And, you know, it's very important that you don't mess that up because it's
right.
Baptism. And I think I was supposed to tell people that Jeff would be standing over by the cross if you were interested in, and I forgot to say that second.
Did you have a script?
I did not have a script. So, because this was my first time, they were, I mean, not just kind of throwing me out there expecting me to know how to do things on my own.
Well, that's good.
Which was very nice of them. Kevin sent me an email of how he usually sets a baptism, what he usually says. And I just kind of went off of that and, not word for word, but just, understanding what baptism is all about and then trying to convey that in a way that really connects with people. So here's the deal with baptism.
Oh,
it's kind of a call. Right. As I said before, Bonhoeffer says, when Jesus calls a man, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die, right? Like you're dying to yourself, you go under the water, the old you is gone, right? You come up in resurrection and power. But as you're saying that as a host, congregation, I bid you come and die.
You great.
Can't say that.
Yes, you
count
can.
Me in.
You can say it.
I want you to put my head underwater, that's for sure.
Anyway.
So did you say that?
No.
Okay.
No, but this is what I mean by it's so much trickier than just like singing. I could sing all day.
Well, what would you say instead of that? Like, I bid you come and bathe.
No. I talked about how it was symbolic of Christ's death and coming out of the water was symbolic of his resurrection. And, you know, it's all good stuff. But so I was doing Way of Discipleship with someone earlier this afternoon, and we were talking about being selfless and dying to self. And sometimes we paint certain aspects of, you know, our Christianity just with a positive brush, right?
Right.
Just like, yeah, do it. We're going to all go out to dinner after you get baptized. When really you could easily say, you know, thank you so much. It's so exciting that you have now signed on for some suffering, maybe some desertion.
Free McAllister's after baptism is way better.
Right. People will hate you and flog you in the public square.
Don't be surprised when they hate you because they hated me first. That's what Jesus said. So you can't really set up baptism that way, but maybe next time I will. I don't know.
So do you think you're going to do this again? Did you enjoy it?
Y'all, I have been scheduled.
You like
this again.
You love it.
I don't think
she has a choice is what she's saying.
Oh, wow.
No. I'm glad. I was afraid of a train wreck, as usual. I mean, worst case scenario, right? What's every possible thing that could go wrong? I could fall into the baptismal by accident while connected to wires. These are the things that I picture happening.
That went through your mind?
In real time.
Fall into the tank?
All the
with
time.
Wires attached.
Do you know that I can't walk past the tank without thinking about falling in?
Even when it's covered? That's an elaborate imagination.
I know there's a tank in there.
Yes, there were a lot of moving parts in this service. There were kids up and down, like throughout the service. There was just a lot going on. So
sure,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've hosted twice. Both times I froze.
Did you?
Yeah, because I was like new to the job and I didn't want to mess it up. And there were like seven announcements.
Oh yeah,
and I stood there. Which felt like probably 4 minutes. And I was just like,
That surprises me. You are like the guy.
I could totally do it now because I'm comfortable. But I was talking about like Whiz Kids or something, like
tutoring.
Tutoring, and I couldn't remember what I wanted to say, so I stood there and like deer in the headlights for a good 5 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. Thankfully that did not happen.
Yeah. What happened, though, anymore.
The kids were singing. They were in Fisher's part of, there was a song at the top of the service, and in Fisher's, the kids came up and joined Will at the end of the service as well. So both times I was proud mama, cell phone, grinning ear to ear. And then as soon as the song ended, Jeff got to the platform before I did because I was just in mom mode.
Jeff is your co-host.
Yes. You come running with your phone flying.
He was co-hosting with me, and both times, oh no, and put my phone down.
Oh, you missed your cue.
Totally, because I was proud mom.
Yeah.
I don't want to throw Mel under the bus at all, but at 146th Street, she had a really fun service.
But wasn't it just Saturday? Was it limited
Saturday,
to Saturday?
Yeah, 4:30. 4:30 was
Mel Boyer, friend of the pod.
Well, she did great, but at 4:30 we hit like every possible train wreck. Like Brad, at one point, he's coming in here in a little bit. Something had disconnected with his earpiece, and so we were about to kick off the first song, and he's like, I can't hear anything.
Yeah.
Oh man. And then we forgot to speaker assistant forgot to bring the table up at the first service. And so I'm standing up there with my notes. They're bringing a chalkboard on. There's a kid stayed up on stage for a while. Like it was just
a blooper circus, reel.
It was really amazing.
Yeah. All the things that could go wrong and sometimes do. Yeah. But that was the weekend. Well, for me that was Sunday. For you it was Saturday and Sunday. Like
yeah.
For you, it was a lot more.
Yeah, I don't think people realize it actually, when you're on the weekend, like if you're doing worship is the biggest time commitment of all. If you're in the worship team for a weekend at 146th Street, that means you're coming in on Thursday, or was it Wednesday for rehearsal? Thursday for rehearsal. You have to get here at 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. on Saturday, and you're basically here nonstop till 1 p.m. on Sunday with like a short time to sleep.
Yeah.
in the middle.
It's a big sacrifice.
It's a lot. So speakers have it a little bit easier because we get here at 2:30 on Saturday. Yeah. But
in fairness, you usually get a fruit plate.
Well, that's true. Sometimes there are some dinner
caramel dip with the fruit plate
backstage.
In the backstage.
You're talking about for the musicians?
Yeah.
I don't know about
Saturday.
The fruit.
Yeah, Saturday there's usually food. Thursday there is not, but Saturday they usually. So I was on both services at Fisher's with my kids. They were doing both of the songs or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we got there at 7. And we stayed for the duration of both services and went home. But then my son and I had about 3 hours to kill before coming here to 146 for prayer gathering rehearsal. So it was just a long, long day.
Jam packed
day, but I got to party with your wives Saturday night.
I want to hear about
that. Right.
My goodness, did we have a good time.
Mean? You partied.
We partied. Yeah, it was awesome.
I heard there was some Mexican hot chocolate involved.
There was. So, yeah, your wife, Lauren.
Me, Tyler.
Tyler, this is who I'm pointing to. She took Desi and I to the Museum of Art once before.
Yeah, that's right.
We had an awesome time. It was great. She wanted to do something again.
Showing you the city, man.
Involve Olivia. So that was my first time ever hanging out with Olivia. And it was just so much fun. We went, for burgers somewhere. What was it?
Burger Fuel.
There it is. Thank you guys.
They have the Impossible Burger, which is ridiculous and weird.
It's in Broderville.
And creepy, but amazing.
Yeah, all of those
Look
things.
It up.
All
yeah.
of those things. Yeah, but it was fun. They had a DJ there, which my daughter
Sweet.
Thought was very ironic. Why is there a DJ at this burger joint?
Why was there?
Why wouldn't there be? That sounds amazing.
But then we went to the Soldiers and Sailors Monument to see the lights.
Oh yeah,
it was awesome. Got hot chocolate. But the drive down Meridian to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, both of your wives. Did you know this? Your wives are accomplished rappers. Both of them.
Hang on.
Accomplished. They were just spitting those rhymes.
What does that mean?
Like freestyling or?
I guess they like Hamilton a lot.
Oh yeah, the musical Hamilton.
And my daughter is 12 and she's obsessed with Hamilton. Knows every word backwards and forwards, good ones, bad ones. She knows them all.
It's great.
But right, so then they were. And
oh,
I mean,
they were rhyming the songs.
Thumping. The music.
Thumping.
Like, I sat in the back seat, right? There's a speaker right behind my head.
And the Ford Taurus just like
thumping.
Wow.
The rap as we drove.
Going for it.
Well, Desi was loving every second of it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, my 12-year-old at that moment, I realized is cooler than I am. I'm not. I was not. I wasn't hip. I wasn't with
it. Well, yeah. I could have told you that.
I mean, that's kind of
she
obvious.
She overplayed that soundtrack all of last year. Like,
yeah.
She
And you
she
didn't put in
it.
The effort to
she
memorize
drove it
those
into the
lyrics.
No, I'm sorry. But no, she had told me after, you know, we left and went to go home and on at 7 a.m. we didn't get home till like after midnight. But she's like, I had been worried that you guys would just talk adult things the whole time and like I'd Aww. Feel left out. She's like, but I can't believe I got to talk Hamilton and Marvel with yeah. the same people yeah. in the same conversation. She was
That's
like,
awesome.
Our wives
she
are
was
very
flying
cool.
high. You guys have the coolest wives
cool
ever.
Wives.
I can't thank them enough.
Hashtag
it was
cool
such
wives.
A fun night. Yeah, it was awesome. Oh, and I know I'm talking a lot because my weekend was
you had a
yeah,
great weekend.
My
Sounds
weekend packed. Was more awesome than your weekend.
Probably.
Ruth Schwartz took me on a
Ruth
mid-century
Schwartz.
Modern house tour.
She
How cool
is
that?
On staff.
Yes.
She's maybe our longest tenured staff member.
She is awesome. She is one of my yeah. absolute favorite
she
people.
She took you
to
on a home
with.
Tour.
She did. We went to Carmel and we went to, oh, what's the name? Oh, come on. There's a female architect who designed mid-century modern homes in one little neighborhood called Thornhurst. Mm-hmm. And that's like my favorite, absolute favorite form of architecture. So we...
Houses in Carmel?
Specifically mid-century modern homes.
Okay.
There's like no other home that I would even be
So are you like really into Frank Lloyd Wright and
yes,
all that?
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. So I didn't live far from Oak Park.
I don't know any
South
of this.
Side of Chicago, mm-hmm. like loaded with super cool Frank Lloyd Wright homes and all that stuff. So it was super cool. I got to like really embrace and love Carmel and Indianapolis and Broad Ripple. And it was good. It was a good immersion
good.
Weekend for me.
Well,
great.
Welcome.
Thank you, guys.
So do you guys have that room in your house, or maybe it's a drawer or a closet that's just like, I don't want to deal with that right now. Let's just toss it in this one place that's basically an apocalypse of your stuff.
Yes, I do.
I don't have enough rooms to afford to have a room.
Well, maybe it's a table
or like
a
that.
Cabinet or something.
Every surface in my house is that.
Really?
Yeah.
So like if you get a bunch of mail, you're like, I don't know, I'll just... Look at that later. You just toss it.
I go, that surface is full. I guess I'll have to put it on that surface until all okay. surfaces are full. And then I freak out.
So that place in my house is my desk. And I just got in a mood this weekend where I'm like, I'm getting organized, guys. I am doing all of my laundry, which I don't usually do very often.
You're such a big boy.
Hey, hang on.
Adulting. Here we are.
And I'm cleaning off this desk once and for all. I'm tired of not being able to use my desk. So I start cleaning it off and I look at the computer that's sitting on there that I haven't turned on in about 4 or 5 years. And I'm like, I'm going to throw this away or get rid of it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Give it to someone. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I'm in the process of telling Lauren, my wife, I'm getting rid of this. And she says, make sure our wedding photos are off of it. Okay. So I turn it on. And I haven't turned this thing on in 5 years, 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who knows how outdated it is. And I turn it on and it takes about 30 minutes for it to get up and running. And I'm looking for these photos. Every time I move my mouse, the like pinwheel rainbow comes on. And it got me thinking, okay, I wouldn't grab this thing if there was a fire in my house, but like, people's photos are pretty important,
yes.
right? So like I have all of my college photos. There were like 4,000 photos on this computer that I'm ready to get rid of. And when the cloud started being a thing, like put your stuff in the cloud, Mm-mm. it took like an act of Congress to figure out where my stuff is. Now it's pretty easy. You just go to Google Photos and there's all your stuff. But at the beginning of this whole thing, impossible. So I'm like, I'm going to put all my photos on my computer. Well, smash cut to me spending 7 hours on Saturday trying to get these photos off of this computer. And I'm like, yeah, I'm being told that my computer's not upgraded and I need to update in order to even look at my stuff anymore. And so I spent all day
yep.
trying to get photos that don't exist in my hand. They're yep. just on my screen, mm-hmm. allegedly, because I can't look at them. Off of that onto my phone or the cloud.
Mm-mm.
And it took so long. So I'm thinking, why is this a thing? Why does this happen? Like, does this happen to you guys where it's like whether it's a hard drive or a laptop or something where
obsolete
it's like,
phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like looking at it and it takes forever, but you have to do something and you spend your whole day doing that one thing. It's when you wanted to spend about
literally the most aggravating thing for me because technology should serve you. You shouldn't serve it. And so when you
I was definitely serving it on Saturday.
Yeah. You gave it your life and your time.
Yeah.
I one time lost all of my photos from 2005 and before, except for like maybe five photos that existed somewhere else because I had a hard drive crash on my computer. So that meant all of the photos of myself and of my time living in Kenya for 2005 gone forever.
Yeah.
That was a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a blessing and a curse, this photo thing. Like, we have the obsolete, like, Hewlett Packard with, like, the big tower.
What are you
going
to do?
I keep the thing because I don't trust the cloud.
Yeah, but
that's surprising.
How are you? You don't trust the cloud.
I don't. I'll just keep the thing in my garage.
We don't know what that cloud wants.
Mm-mm.
So
I don't know who the when. No. Even we were talking about going to this burger place, like me and both of y'all's wives, and then I think it was your wife that like randomly got a coupon. Thank you, Barry.
Listeners can't see us.
I'm a terrible podcaster today. This is not good for me. Barry's wife Olivia got a random coupon for the place we were talking about going to. That's what I mean. Like, your phone is like always no more than 2 feet away from you at all times.
Yeah.
I think it's listening.
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Yes. And watching and
but
listening.
I would rather
don't trust it.
I was about ready to just forget about the wedding photos and forget about all this stuff because of how much time I was putting into it. Like, if I had to put more than 20 minutes into this project, I was ready to just toss it.
No. So my mom, she's got like the old fashioned photo album and she kept them in our living room.
I'm convinced that's the way to go.
But then our living room flooded.
See?
And she lost all those photos. So
cloud doesn't flood.
That's where it's the blessing. Like, I still have those pictures of my kids from the early 2000s or whatever, like, because they exist in some digital form somewhere. And some of them I have printed off, but
there's
like,
probably a way
guaranteed.
That none of us know about that exists that somebody's going to tell me. To figure it out, but all those photos are now on my phone.
See, I for one welcome our robot overlords. I'm ready.
I'm ready too, man. That was a long day of basically doing nothing. All right, let's move on. We've got a jam-packed pod today, guys.
Yeah,
we've got many guests coming in, but let's dig into Barry's sermon, which kicked off a new series called The Thrill of Hope. And you talked about Zechariah this weekend.
I did.
Yeah. So I'm going to play a clip and then we can just ruminate on it for a little bit.
All right.
And here's what's kind of crazy. This is what we're talking about this series, which I think is going to be useful. And it's the idea that the birth of baby Jesus is not the beginning of the Christmas story. It's the middle.
Okay. Let's start there. And Barry, you can kind of lead this discussion if you want, but I want to start there because everyone in America, if they're like me, you're like, hang on, buddy. Don't you tell me that baby Jesus isn't the beginning of the Christmas story. What are you trying to do to me? So can you talk for those who may have missed the service or were copying your awesome drawings on the chalkboard and may have missed that part? Why is baby Jesus not the beginning of the Christmas story?
Yeah, so it was kind of a complicated thing. It actually took me quite a while to figure out how to frame the whole sermon so that people could follow. But basically, the whole idea that I was getting across is that the coming of Jesus and the way that Luke tells about the coming of Jesus was actually part of a much broader story of God bringing salvation to all of the world, restoring creation back to his intended design. I mean, it's the whole mission of God in a nutshell. And it all just hinges on the coming of Jesus, but you can't understand what the coming of Jesus actually meant until you understand all of the things that came before, until you understand the story of the people of God in the Old Testament. And that's one of the things that we're modern evangelical Christians these days, and we have just completely missed the fact that the Old Testament makes the New Testament happen. If we didn't have the Old Testament, the New Testament is meaningless. So I guess all that to say, we're looking specifically in this series at the book of Luke because Luke does an amazing job of reminding us of that because Luke 1 and 2 are totally hints back to the Old Testament. He points the finger all the way back to Moses and to King David and to the exile and to the prophets. And he is trying to show us through the language he's using that this is not the beginning of the story. It's been going on for a very long time.
So why didn't you just say that?
That's a good question. Well, because there's
a thing.
Because
it was much more...
I love it.
Lively to make the drawings.
Wait,
why did I? Why did,
no, 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 no.
What are you asking?
Why didn't Luke?
Yeah.
Just
what did Luke
say,
just say?
Hey, this is about everything. You know, this is. I'm going to start this by talking about a baby, but it's about way more. And maybe he did, based on what you said. Everything he said kind of points directly back to things that happened hundreds of years ago. And
I mean, Luke was presumably a Gentile, but a lot of the people he was writing to were most likely Jewish. And so as far as they were concerned, this was the story that they'd been living. And he was simply just picking up the threads where they left off.
Yeah.
So he didn't need to say, hey, guys, let me tell you a story from a long ago. Because their story, that was something they all were intimately familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess if you just start talking about a baby, it doesn't make much sense unless you tie it back to the story that people are already living.
Right. But like, let me ask you guys this question. How often, and maybe you guys aren't the right people to ask, but how often do you think about, when you think about faith and spirituality and God and Jesus and all that, how often do you think about the Babylonian exile?
Until Sunday, 0% of my life, I've thought about that.
Okay.
I spend very little time thinking about the Babylonian exile.
Man, that a soundbite for sure. I spend very little of my time thinking.
Oh man. Yeah. You are not alone in that. And I was the same way for a long time until really recently when I started to realize just how crucial the exile was and the part that it plays
for sure
into why people wanted a savior in the first place.
Can you imagine going, would you say it was 500 years?
Well, from the end of the exile until the coming of Jesus was 500 ish years.
So the whole point of talking about Zechariah is, yeah, this promise that you guys have basically all heard your entire lives for 500 years or more, it's now starting to happen. This is what you're waiting for, right?
Right.
That's kind of like the big thought.
Right. This is the promise that you've been hearing from all of your prophets for hundreds of years. It's all happening right now to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you said that made me think, okay, it's 2017. What happened 500 years ago that was either prayed for or thought about or talked about within churches or leaders that's just now starting to come true?
Putting
photos in the
cloud.
Yes.
People wanted to just take photos.
Like,
first of all,
let's
in
context
access.
When you said, like, since the printing press.
Right.
Like, to help us kind of get a point
of
reference.
Yeah, how long ago that was. Yeah.
From printing press to the cloud.
Right. Well, they first had to invent photography, and then anyway.
So what stuff did you want people to hear at the end of the sermon? Because it was jam packed with like so much information, and I loved it because you talked about geeking out over tying all the threads together and stuff like that. And I am right there with you. But at the end of the sermon, you kind of made it very like personal and applicable. What do you want people to take away with this?
I'd say two things. One, like you said, at the end of the sermon, I just talked specifically about salvation and the fact that we get so caught up in just how messed up our world is. You know, all the sexual harassment allegations going around, all of the injustice, all the racial injustice, all the things that we are just constantly just swimming in every single day. And not to mention all of our personal issues, anxiety and sin and addictions and depression, all the things that just beset us as modern people. And I think we get lazy because we think, oh, well, I'm a Christian, so I guess this is just it. And we forget the fact that even if you've decided to follow Jesus, you still need Jesus to save you.
Yeah.
And he offers that salvation, and his kingdom is a place where we can find the answers to all those things. And we can actually find healing, and we can actually find hope, and we can turn hatred into love. Like, mm-hmm. We can do those kinds of things through Jesus, which I think we undersell him by turning him into just a death insurance policy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
mm-hmm.
it's about now. It's not just about the future. So that's part of it. The other thing is, I just want people to read the Bible more and to actually enjoy it, mainly because I'm having a blast these days. I'm seeing all these threads connecting, and it is just so engaging. When you know what to look for when you're reading Luke 1 and 2, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, I didn't realize how this all connected. And you start looking at how these different prophecies came from different times in Israel's history, and they're being repeated on the mouth of Mary, the mother of Jesus, in the context of this angel coming who was there, and Jesus then later on calls himself the Son of Man, which is coming straight from Daniel, which mm-hmm. is what the angel was talking to. Anyway, it's like, whoa, you get to see all these yeah. things. And all of a sudden, the Bible becomes so much more rich, and not just this sort of, I don't know, like, divine owner's manual that just got, you know, that we just flip to and try to look for pat answers to life's questions, but an actual story that draws you into something.
Right. Right. Yeah. More than a troubleshooting guide.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the story of Zechariah basically is he's John the Baptist's dad.
Right.
And an angel comes and talks to him and says, basically all these promises are going to be, your son's going to help usher these in. Right. Right?
Well, yeah. Cause there were all these prophecies. Again, the idea of the Messiah was something that developed after the exile. It wasn't, I mean, the prophecies were there, but people didn't weave those together mm-hmm. the way that we would think of until later on. And there's other documents that aren't in the Bible that come from that sort of post-exilic period where you can actually see the idea of the Messiah coming together. There's this one thing called the Messianic Apocalypse, and it's got some like weird alphanumeric title because it's just part of the Dead Sea Scrolls, but it talks about this king, this anointed king who would bring sight, recovery of sight to the blind and healing to the lame and justice and all these threads being tied together for, it's one of the earliest times we've seen them all in one place. And we're getting way down in the weeds here, but when you hear John the Baptist at some point sends his disciples to Jesus to ask, are you the one? Are you the Messiah?
Right.
And what does Jesus answer? He says, all the stuff that you read in the Messianic Apocalypse, that fragment document, he says, well, go back and tell them the blind are receiving sight, right, the lame right. are walking. And he quotes back all these things in the same order. This was something, an idea that had built. So Zechariah was the father of John the Baptist, and the prophecies that the angel tells him, which you referred to, are all regarding a specific aspect of the Messiah's coming, which was that somebody, some prophet, was going to be like, God was going to raise them up. And at some point in Malachi, says he's actually going to raise up Elijah again. And so anyway, raise yeah. somebody up who would prepare the way for the Messiah. And so what the angel is telling Zechariah is, your son's going to be that guy. He's going to be the prophet that's going to prepare the way for the Messiah. So it's very specific. And again, we read it and we're like, neat. But it really would have been profound for Zechariah.
If an angel comes and tells me my son's going to do all this stuff, you better check my medication. Because, like, that's insane.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, he was telling him that he was going to be in the spirit and the power of Elijah, yeah. one of the great prophets from the Old Testament, was going to be his son. And then his son went out and wore, like, camel skin clothes and ate locusts and lived in the desert.
I would love to have seen his parents in those years. Like,
so that was
my boy.
Yeah, that was my question. Is like,
but they were already pretty old. I wonder if they lived long enough to see it.
Right.
After you hear this from the angel, are you like, my son's going to be in a bubble? He's a bubble boy.
Like, John the Baptist, bubble boy. I'm not going to let anything happen to him.
Anything happen to this kid, because he is supposed to be here for greatness and nothing can happen to him.
So he got all sheltered.
Yeah,
like,
bubble boy.
John the Baptist falls out of a tree. No, he's cool. It's good. We've got the promise.
Oh, so you'd go the other way.
He'll survive that one because we've already been
there's a burning building. Send John the Baptist in there.
I could see both ways, because if he was the bubble boy where his parents were totally coddling him and protecting him, then maybe the whole camel hair desert thing was like, you guys don't understand me. Yeah. I'm going to the wilderness.
Yeah. Revolt, man.
Yeah. He's like writing emo songs and
yeah.
Oh my goodness.
The world is torture. Then he goes out and becomes a prophet. No, I don't think that was actually.
Because how old was he when he was doing all that stuff?
He was 6 months older than Jesus, and they were cousins.
So like 30.
By the way, do you know they were cousins? That's in
yes.
there. And so he was like, yeah, 30-ish, in his 30s, but when that all happened. But it doesn't say, and on this specific date, John began a ministry of baptizing people. He might have been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Thank before. You for clarifying that his last name was not The Baptist. That was great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's...
Why do we call him that?
Because he baptized people. And so people were like, oh, he's a... What do you call someone who does something like that? He's a baptizer? No, he's a Baptist. Sure.
John the Baptist.
He was not a Southern Baptist or a Reformed Baptist or any of those kind of denominations that we think of.
What, I mean, we kind of already did this, but what stuff did you leave on the cutting room floor that you wish you could have said?
Oh, man. I could have gone on for a long time. There's a lot of little things, little tiny cool things that I guess I just didn't have time to talk about. For example, I talked all about the exile and how, you know, all the expectation that came from that. I also discovered in my research and reading that it says in Luke that Zechariah was from the order of Abijah or Abijah or however you want to pronounce it, which I had to look up. It was a group of priests, an order of priests that came back from exile with Zerubbabel when he built the walls of, or when he came back to rebuild Jerusalem and start building Jerusalem. So he was one of the first, the order of prophets that came back from the exile. It's another little thing just kind of pointing the way to the idea that this man is doing his, sorry, did I say prophets? I mean priests.
I don't know.
Tyler's not tracking with me. Marin's
this is a, this is one of these things that's like,
anyway,
man, I wish I knew all this stuff. Is it even possible for me to know this stuff?
No,
like, okay.
Not you.
Oh, Marin.
It's totally possible. I'm not special. Like, okay. I just,
different people have different gifts and not everyone is going to have Barry's gift. And so that's why I love it when you geek out because you are gifted in that way and you are electric. It's like infectious. Your excitement over what you're discovering as you research and as you're able to connect all these dots, like we catch that wave and it's like, oh man, this is super cool. Please take me on your trip.
Well, thank you. I hope you guys will tell me the moment I've gone overboard and I'm doing it just a little too much and laying it on a little too thick because I really do.
Well, I lost you with the pastor or the prophet priest thing.
Priest. He was just, sorry.
Everything before that was great.
Let me say it again. What I meant to say was his great, great whatever grandfather, somebody, came back from the exile and was one of the very first orders of priests that worked in the new temple that was built. And that was just a little hint that Luke gives us, again, tying back to the exile.
Which didn't come close to the glory of the temple before exile.
Right,
is what
right.
You said.
And here's, exactly. The temple that they built, the second temple that they built, there's a story, I think it's in Nehemiah, when they first just build the foundation for the new temple. There's like all the young people are super pumped because they didn't see the old temple. They're like, yeah, we're going to have a temple again. Israel's on its way back, baby. And all the old people, they are weeping just looking at the platform for the new temple because they realized it wouldn't even hold a candle to what the old one looked like, to what the old Solomon's temple looked like.
Anyway. And all of that to say, we're kicking off Christmas season. And this is why we celebrate Christmas.
The hopes and fears of all the years are met right there. And that little baby, a thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Let earth receive her king. This is why we celebrate Christmas. It points the way to the Savior we have all been looking for. Jesus brings salvation to the world.
Poignant. Great stuff.
Say that again.
Poignant.
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 Is it poink?
Poink. Poignant. Is a very poignant statement.
Poignant.
That's it.
Great.
So they're waiting for this like glorious temple to be built. They're disappointed by the one they were able to build, right? I want to see if I am tracking with you correctly.
Sure.
But then there's your temple right there who says that he is able to like tear it down and rebuild it in 3 days. Like, so they're looking for this like palatial structure. In comes manger baby Jesus, not quite the temple they were looking for.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, you get into some really, really cool stuff when you look at that because basically, he's saying, no, I am the temple. The temple was always the meeting place for God to meet humans, to be on the earth. That was where he dwelled. And suddenly Christ comes and he is the temple. And then guess what? All of his followers are the new priests. We are the ones working in the temple to represent God to humanity. It's
they
freaking
wanted
awesome
to reclaim
stuff.
That former glory, but they had no idea what was ahead and the true temple that
they
didn't even know.
They thought best case scenario, we get a really cool looking building and no, they get God with us. Wow. They get Emmanuel.
I think that's a really cool way to look at the story. I mean, usually, I'm going to probably regret saying this, but usually every year I'm like, Christmas story. All right, let's move on. But the way we're setting this up at Grace for this season is like, that is awesome. I had no idea, you know, and I wish that we kind of did that every year. It's like, this is all part of it. I'm part of it. You're part of it. Moses was part of it. Jesus is part of it. Zechariah is part of it. It's all part of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Christmas. It's not just about one thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. So when we come back, we're going to speak with author Maggie Johnson about her book that takes us through the Advent season into Christmas called Prepare Him Room when we come back.
Hey guys, this is Emily O'Connor. I produce the podcast every week. Just wanted to let you know that next week we will have our teaching pastor, Tim Ayers, as a guest on the pod. And we're going to have an Ask Tim Anything segment. So if you have any questions for Tim about the Bible, and I know you do, now's the chance to ask. You can go to betweensundays.us to submit your question or submit your questions to Grace's Twitter or Facebook accounts.
Thanks for sticking with us on Between Sundays. We are here with Maggie Johnson. Welcome, Maggie.
Hey, guys.
So Maggie is a author these days, also a staff member, also a friend. And you have written a book called Prepare Him Room, an Advent devotional.
Yeah, it feels weird to be called an author, by the way.
Why?
Well,
you are one.
Yeah, but first of all, this was self-published, so... I know that that doesn't matter, but for me, it just feels weird to have my first book be something that was fully initiated by me, and now people are calling me an author.
So. Yeah.
You're an independent author.
Yeah.
If we can have, like, independent musicians, like, self-releasing music, why don't you self-release your stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Independent author Maggie Johnson.
How long have you been writing?
Oh, gosh, as long as I can remember. In elementary school, I wrote very terrible poetry, and
does that still exist somewhere?
Yeah, it does, but you will never see it.
Please.
We were unpacking our house last year, and my husband Will found my old books of poetry from elementary school, and he just died laughing. Mm-hmm. It was really bad.
Oh, he laughed at you.
Oh, yeah.
So that's you're not cool. Saying Will knows where they are.
Yeah.
He might, but he wants to stay married to me, so he will not.
So here's the deal. You, how long has this project gone on? Because you published it, what, a month ago?
Yeah, mid-October. Okay. So I started writing it, I would say, in May, I think.
And why'd you decide that you wanted to write an Advent book? Out of all the possibilities, why this type?
Yeah, Advent has always intrigued me. I grew up not really paying attention to the church calendar, especially liturgical things like Advent. And so when I went to college, I went to Moody Bible Institute, I became more familiar with Advent. And so ever since then, I've just been obsessed with the concept.
What is the concept? Because I, truthfully, before I read your book, Advent to me was opening
a little drawer
with a chocolate bell in it. Or ribbon or something. There's just chocolate in there 25 times, and that's what Advent was to me. I had no idea what this meant.
Didn't you say you were Adventing or something?
Yeah, I was Adventing, texting Maren the other day. I was like, I'm reading Maggie's book, Adventing. Like, what's the verb for going through this?
Adventing. Don't Advent too hard.
Oh my gosh.
So can you explain what the concept of Advent is?
Yeah, so themes of Advent... the big one is waiting. So waiting on the coming of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And the people of God waited, you know, for so long for this promised Messiah to come. And so that's the big heart behind Advent is preparing ourselves and waiting on Jesus to come. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a lot of what we just talked about the sermon plays directly into the idea of Advent, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've always been intrigued by the topic, and then you just decided, I'm going to come up with 25 passages, like bring us into your system or your method of writing this.
When you decided to re-advent yourself.
Yeah. When you started adventing.
Barry's geek jokes.
Welcome.
So it was a lot harder than I originally thought it was going to be, coming up with 25 passages. I actually talked to Barry a lot about this because I was trying to figure out there are five big themes of Advent: hope, joy, peace, Christ.
And that's only four, but
well, yeah. You can Google
them. In other traditions, they're candles.
Yeah.
So I came from a Reformed tradition where it was, you know, different colors of a candle, mm-hmm. purple, pink.
Yeah.
Christ's candle is always white. But yeah, that each one represents a different thing. Joy, yeah. hope, candle of love.
Yep.
Yeah.
Christ, I think candle, the last one was a Christ candle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was actually going to go.
Still four.
Yes.
I think maybe faith, was faith the other one? Somebody Google this.
You could probably say whatever you want, and I'll believe you.
Whatever.
Cheetos.
I think preparation is actually one of them. Okay. But so I originally was going to go through all five of those themes and have five passages for each theme, but that felt way too complicated, especially since the overall theme for this devotional is preparation, preparing mm-hmm. ourselves for Jesus. So decided to just focus on that for each passage and kind of pull out that theme for each one. For passages that may not even be obvious that can tie into it. So honestly, I just picked passages that in my life have been really impactful and have drawn me closer to Christ.
So you can definitely pick up your tone from the very first page. And I was tweeting about this the other day when I was going through it, or when I started adventing, was,
can that be a hashtag?
This is for a very specific person. It sounds like, yeah. like there are Advent devotionals all over the place, but this is for a very specific person. Mm-hmm. And you say, Our cheeks are rosy with joy and our hearts are full. There are those people who welcome merriment with little fuss. And then there's you and me, the ones who trudge through the bristling winds of December, feeling just as cold inside as it appears to be outside. So this is for somebody who needs something, mm-hmm. right? Can you talk a little bit more about why you chose that tone?
Yeah, I actually had several friends edit this, and many of them suggested that I not take that approach because they didn't want me to alienate people who had a hard time with Christmas. They wanted me to have a more broad audience. But the truth is that I don't know how to write for those people in the Christmas season, because this is my experience. Mm-hmm. My experience is that Christmas is hard. I've struggled with seasonal depression almost my entire life. And a lot of my loss that I've experienced has happened during the Christmas season. And so that's where I identify. And so I wanted to connect with those people.
One of the things I love about your approach to this is you include a lot of personal stories mm-hmm. and personal experiences and how these different passages have affected you, which to me, just, it's so much more authentic and real than a lot of devotionals that I've read in the past, where it's all just like talking about these like make believe, like super Christians that just, you're like, what real world do you inhabit that you're able to live that? But yours are just real. They're real and they're authentic and raw. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm pretty impressed with your willingness to go there in some of these and just talk about some of the junk from your past. Was that hard for you to do? Was it a challenge?
It wasn't hard, but I was a little bit afraid that people were going to read this and think it was way... like that I'm a Debbie Downer, kind of, you know, because I didn't really talk about anything joyful from my own experiences. But that's because I believe that, you know, growth comes when we engage our pain. But for people, again, who Christmas is joyful and they love it and it's like all roses and unicorns, they probably would not enjoy all of my stories in this devotional.
I think that they would. I'm going to push back on that, Maggie Johnson.
You do it, girl.
Because while you're describing your experience, mm-hmm. and it isn't necessarily unicorns and roses, mm-hmm. Which aren't traditional pieces in the Christmas story either.
You don't have a Christmas unicorn in your family?
I should have a Christmas unicorn atop my Christmas tree. but you always bring the light of hope mm-hmm. out of these stories. So it's, you don't leave us in the darkness. You begin to show how Christ reveals his life and his light in the midst of your darkness. So I think that it's for everybody. It's for the ones who are jolly and set up their Christmas trees on November 1st. And it's for the rest of us, too.
I would say there's someone other than jolly. That's something other than jolly. When you're November 1st, that's a little aggressive. That's insulting or something. That's
obsessive.
Yeah, you're now like infringing on my joy.
Gosh. Yeah, your passages leave us. They leave the reader with something to think about, either throughout the rest of the day or just through the rest of that morning's meditation or whatever. You leave us in a place where you ask poignant questions.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it's gonna follow you forever. Yeah. In day four, you say, God is the opposite of everything I fear. You were talking about being afraid of the dark. And when he says that he is light and in him there is no darkness, the revelation that he's the opposite of everything you fear, I could think about that for like 10 days in a row. Like there's just so much power packed into these little excerpts that we get. Thank you for just
You probably do need to think about that 10 days in a row. You Googled scary spiders and just to see what exists.
That's what jumped out to me. Like, she's afraid of stuff too.
Yeah.
God is the opposite of all of my fears. And I did take it there. Like, okay, God, what's the opposite of a giant snake? Because that's you. If you're the opposite of everything I fear.
I know.
What's the opposite?
Snakes. I can't.
And by the way, like what we just talked about, the world is weary waiting for Jesus. Like, there wasn't hope, really. Because it had been 500 years since these promises had been made.
Yeah.
The only reason that people go through the Christmas season super joyful is because they know that the hope exists. Mm-hmm. But if you take the approach that, like, Christmas is hard, I am assuming it was probably hard for all the people that existed before the baby Jesus showed up that provided the hope. So I really resonate, even based on what we talked about this weekend in the sermon, I really resonate with the tone of this book because it kind of puts me in the place of somebody who lived during a time that was just like waiting, waiting for something, waiting for a Messiah, waiting for something. Yeah. Yeah. And you take me there.
And this is what we miss. Sorry. This is what we miss when we do have Advent be just opening up little chocolate bells or whatever. Cause then that's just like, oh, I can't wait to get presents.
Yes.
Mm. If that's what your expectation is, that's missing what the hope is that we actually.
And it's mediocre chocolate at best.
Right. It's always that like cheap milk chocolate.
Again, like you said that you grew up not paying much attention to the church calendar, and I can say the same thing. We did not put a lot of stock into that, the church that I grew up in. My kids went to a Lutheran school in Chicago. That was Missouri Synod Lutheran and very traditional. In that church, they cover up all images of Christ in the sanctuary and don't unveil them until Christmas day.
That's cool.
As all just kind of building up that anticipation of this is what it's all about. And then he came. In other churches where I've served, you don't sing about songs that he's here just for the month of December, just to help build up that anticipation for those three or four Sundays that you have leading up to Christmas. So yeah, this notion of waiting. Now you say I think in your introduction or your first day that we know he's here. Mm. We know that he's already here, but we still prepare our hearts for him. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I didn't want to ignore the fact that we have the Holy Spirit. I think it's really easy for us to forget about the Holy Spirit or to think that the Holy Spirit is subordinate to the other two parts of the Trinity. And that I did not want that to be a thing that got left out of this this whole theme and this idea, because it's really easy to think that I'm just trudging along, or that, again, in this theme of preparation, that I have to prepare for God before he'll meet with me, which is not the case. If we are believers and we are secure in our salvation in Jesus, then we have the Holy Spirit dwelling with us 100% of the time. It's not this situation where he'll leave if we haven't had our quiet time that morning.
So I was talking to somebody else about this idea of preparing earlier this week. It's kind of ironic that here we are kind of discussing this again, and it had nothing to do with Advent. This person was telling me a revelation that it's a pastor I know from back home was telling me he had a revelation about what worship is, and that worship just prepares your spirit prepares your heart, prepares your soul for an encounter with the living God. That's what it is. It's that preparation that we need. That our souls need that. And I like to refinish furniture. I've taken wire brushes to like rusty metal furniture, and I have to like prep the surface so that it can receive the color, and the color would adhere and that kind of thing. In your book, you talked about a time when God was telling you to get your house in order, you know, just preparing. And with, you know, without going into too much detail or whatever, what does that mean when he comes to you and says, get your house in order?
Yeah. And was that terrifying?
Okay. Yeah. So let me just tell you, that's the story and introduction for those of you who haven't.
Yeah, let's walk through it.
Who haven't. Yeah. It was, okay. So I'm an 8 on the Enneagram. You guys talked about that a few episodes ago.
Oh, and, friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Big time listener.
Yep. Hashtag Grace Pod.
Yeah.
And so I am really big on justice and things being right. And so this one area of my life was probably this is going to sound really weird, but it was probably the one time in my life that I had something hidden that I knew wasn't right, and I could not bring it into the light. And literally for years, I knew that this thing wasn't right and that I needed to confess it, but I was too afraid, until suddenly, I don't remember exactly when it was, but the Holy Spirit just started laying heavy on my heart. And I started having these dreams that I needed to get my house in order. And it was this calm voice, like the Holy Spirit just coming to me in the middle of the night saying, it's time to get your house in order. And I knew exactly what it meant. And it took me months to finally give in. I mean, I was fighting. Mm. I was wrestling. And it made me think of the story of Jacob wrestling with God. And I totally felt like I was Jacob. I was like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to communicate with you. I'm trying to live this life of ministry. And at the time, Will was a worship director at a church, and we were doing ministry in this little tiny church. And I felt like I was one person in front of everyone else. And then even in private, away from my husband, I was someone completely different. And so when I finally gave in and confessed my sin, it was like this weight was just taken off of me.
So. You became one person again.
Yeah. And honestly, after I confessed that and after I prepared my house and got my house in order is when God kind of opened the door for us to come to Grace. So that was super cool. I felt like God was preparing us for something big. I didn't know what it was. And then God brought us here.
What an invitation. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear get your house in order, and it's daunting, because I've been through the same thing, And it was just like terrifying. Mm-hmm. But what an invitation. Like, here, I will give you freedom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that this is only about confession, but I think a similar thing happened to me back in 2005 when I was in Kenya. I won't get into the whole story, but at one point I decided that I had so much unconfessed sin and sin struggles in my life that I had to tell somebody. And so I called my parents on this international call and confessed everything that I had ever done that was unconfessed, and everything I was struggling with. And my poor mom.
Holy cow.
Yeah. No, it was a lot. It was a lot. And looking back, I probably would have maybe just talked to dad first and then moved on to mom at some point. But the thing was, it really did. It swept out my heart and prepared it. And after that was when I first began following, like truly surrendering and following Christ in ways that I had not before, because I wasn't held back by all the junk. I had a clean slate. Now, I was in another country, so of course I could be whoever I wanted. And so I had the privilege of having a clean slate without everyone else having their assumptions on me. I could just be whoever I wanted to be. But man, that set the course for the rest of my life. So I think there's a lot to be said for this idea of going through the hard, hard work of being true.
My favorite quote pertaining to this book came from my friend and co-host Tyler Bender, who was reading the introduction in the first day, and he said, quote, "Man, it's like this book is a cheese grater, and I am the cheese."
Oh my! Very poignant.
No, yes. Like, again, in a good way, like, yeah. Lord, break us down. Give us freedom, yeah. mm-hmm. so that you can prepare us yeah. for your work, for your kingdom. I couldn't be where I am today, sitting where I am today, who I am today, had I not gone through something similar to what you described in your mm-hmm. book, and had Barry not done that either. And even in the Bible, confess your sin one to another that you may be healed.
Yeah.
It's not so that you can, you know, cry and feel bad. It's yeah. so that you may be healed.
Right. At some point, and I wish I had taken better notes to know which day I was referring to. At some point, you talk about the yoke that Jesus gives us. Mm-hmm. You're still going to have a yoke.
Yeah.
It's a matter of which yoke you'll take, and the yoke of Jesus is light and his burden is light. And so I think that's the fear that a lot of people have, is when they think about the idea of confession or of, you know, preparing our hearts and actually surrendering. It's this fear of like, oh man, if I'm really clean out in the open about all this stuff, God's going to blast me and God's, yeah. you know, going to hate me for being, but it's completely the opposite. God is such a God of grace and love that when we do that, He is right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you experience, what was your relationship with God like in the midst of that
yeah.
time of confession? What happened?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I think confession is a lot easier when you have a safe place to belong and to feel true compassion. And there is no way that I would have gotten to the place in my heart where I would have felt free to confess if I didn't have someone like Will, my husband, in my life. Will is the only person that I would have ever confessed that to. And he is the only person who will know the darkest parts of me, because I trust that he will love me no matter what, just like Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's what we all need to experience and to have. We need to have that safe place that mirrors the way that Jesus feels about us.
So what do you expect people who go through this experience or this reading this book for the next 25 days, do you expect them to feel a sense of that?
Mm. Yeah, I hope so. I wrote this while I was pregnant, which is...
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, uh-huh. too.
The baby is currently crying in the hallway.
I can hear the baby crying, yeah. so I'm like, my attention all of a sudden got... Yeah. I got distracted.
And to be clear, face. The baby is being supervised. We didn't just leave the baby in the hall.
She's just chilling out there.
We got some things to talk about, Penny. Let's just hang on a second.
So I wrote this while I was pregnant, and that made this whole thing 1,000 times more real for me.
Yeah.
The idea of waiting on something. Mm. Yeah. It helped to know that there were people around me who loved me, who could help walk with me along that journey of preparation and waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that people feel the personal, care from me when they read my words, but also as we go along in the 25 days, we're going to get more into what it means to be in community with other people, and that will hopefully draw out as well.
So what did it do to you? What did this experience do to you?
It was soul ravaging.
Mm. How so?
Like you were cheese and this was exactly. like the grater.
Yeah, it was like the grater. No, I mean, so I didn't plan out the stories that were going to accompany the passages before I started writing them. Mm. And so I wrote through my own healing in a way, as I was writing each of the stories. And it was hard to realize, like, oh, there are parts of me that I haven't fully grappled with. And in that way, it was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind reading one of the days, taking us through one of those experiences?
I would love to. So I'm going to read from day 2. This is probably, if not my favorite, it's one of my favorite passages and reflections. I'm only going to read the reflection, but the passage for this day is Matthew 1:1-16. And some background on this. This passage grounded me to Jesus in many ways. The first time that I held on to it really tightly was the day that I realized my parents were going to get split up.
Mm-hmm.
My parents had both been accused of some really terrible things, and I clung to this passage to remember who we all belong to. So this is begins on page 13. We all come to the table with a story, a culmination of days and weeks that begin to shape who we are and how we see the world. It's easy to craft an image of God based on our life circumstances. If you had an abusive dad, then God is an authoritarian father just waiting for you to fail. If you grew up poor, then God can seem stingy and withholding. If you had an absent parent, then God can easily feel distant and uncaring. The truth is that our past shapes our perspective, but Jesus is in the business of making things new. He wants to rewrite your story and reframe your perspective. At first glance, the book of Matthew begins with a boring list of biblical names that are hard to pronounce. However, Scripture tends to insert glorious treasure in seemingly mundane settings, which is exactly what happens in Matthew chapter 1. There are five women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus, which would have been scandalous to the intended Jewish reader. Women were never listed in genealogies. Not only was their presence outrageous, but the women Matthew chose to highlight were deplorable. Tamar seduces her father-in-law to get pregnant in Genesis 38. Rahab is described as a prostitute in Joshua 2. Ruth is a Moabite whose family history began with incest in Genesis 19. Bathsheba was the woman who held King David's adulterous affections in 2 Samuel 11, and Mary was an unwed pregnant teen. These are the women Matthew included when introducing us to Jesus for the very first time. By including these five names, Matthew swings wide the doors of grace. There is not one who is too despicable to be in the company of Jesus. There is not one story that is past the point of redemption. Jesus has the power to rewrite your story, and he wants to repurpose your pain for joy. Will you let him? What messy or painful parts of your story do you need to bring to Jesus in prayer? No parts of our stories are wasted in his hands.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Where can people pick this up?
I believe it's sold out in the Grace bookstore.
Dang.
But I think there are a few copies left on Amazon. Last time I checked, there were only 15 copies left.
Wow.
Are you going to order more? What are you going to do?
Yeah, what's happening?
I don't think it's up to me. I think it's up to the distributor. So
you didn't do the print-on-demand thing with like...
Well, I did, but they only print like a certain amount of batches.
Oh.
Well, you're about to see the Between Sundays bump.
Okay.
Seriously.
So you better figure out how to get more books.
So once those 15 run out, then they print more, like another batch. So there will be more available.
Okay.
It just might...
On Amazon.
Be a little while.
Is there a digital version, a Kindle version?
There is not. Hmm. It's only print.
Well, it's great. And thank you for sharing it. Thank you for giving us this gift of an awesome Advent devotional experience. Yeah. Now when I'm Adventing, I really do feel like this is grating away layers of myself that I didn't even know were there. And it's been an amazing experience. It's been joyful. It's been sad. It's been really heart-wrenching and all that stuff. So thank you for this gift. It's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Well, when we come back, we are going to speak with Brad Becky and Will Johnson about some songs that they have written or recorded for Grace Church as another gift to the people of Grace this Christmas season. Thanks for sticking with us on Between Sundays. We are now joined by musical artists. Guys, welcome Brad, Becky, and Will Johnson. Hey, guys.
Ooh. Hey, guys.
Hey.
What's up, fam?
Excited to be here.
So Brad Becky, worship leader at 146th Street Campus, or as you like to say, 146. Will Johnson, worship leader at Fishers.
That's correct.
That's awesome. So you guys are here today to talk about some songs that you recorded. Did you write them or did you just tell us a little bit about
that
this
song,
project?
Joy to the World? I've heard that for a while. You wrote that? Or?
You should use the word arranged from here on out.
I think arranged would be better. Yeah. Isaac Watts wrote that song and it's in public domain. Mm,
so not
sir,
familiar.
Sir.
Sir Isaac Watts.
Not familiar.
Thank you.
Never heard of him.
All due respect.
Yeah. So I really just kind of reinterpreted it, added a couple things that really weren't needed. Let's be honest. It's a great song. It's a great song.
Yeah.
It's a classic. So.
It didn't have enough joy.
Yeah.
So
I
we
think
did.
We added joy.
Turn up the volume.
Every time I hear
joy,
that song, I'm like,
joy.
What is it about, though?
Hope, I think.
I think so.
It's a very hopeful song.
So for those who have not heard the song yet, mm-hmm. Take us through the process. How did you guys decide we should do this? This is something we've never done before as a group. Take us through the whole process of how this became a thing.
They're pointing at each other right now, which is just adorable.
Why don't you take it, Brad?
Okay, so really, it started with this idea that Maggie Johnson, who you guys just had on.
Yeah, friend of the pod.
Yes, she'd written a devotional, Prepare Him Room. And when I saw her post something on Instagram about it, I was like, I think I texted Will and just said, dude, I know Prepare Him Room comes from the song Joy to the World, but if we don't like write a song called Prepare Him Room, we're crazy.
Yeah.
And so he just kind of took it from there, Will did, and he made it into an arrangement of O Come All Ye Faithful. And so him and I had talked before about just reimagining some Christmas songs and kind of making our own and putting the Grace fingerprint on it, and I chose Joy to the World.
So you got a bunch of musicians together.
It's true.
And you received a studio space, or how did this whole thing come about?
Yeah, so Dave Fackler, who is also on staff here at Grace,
yeah.
Is our director of instrumental development, worked at Crew for some like 30 or 50, 90 years, something like that.
Whoa, and,
he goes way back.
Way back.
Sorry, Dave.
Dave's got a great skin regimen.
Yeah, like, looks great.
Moisturized.
Looks great.
I love you, Dave, if you're listening. And yeah, still has some connections with Crew, and Scott Naylor volunteers at Fisher's. Kind of a super volunteer, still on staff at Crew, and
great hair.
Does have great hair.
Does have great hair. And they pulled some strings and were able to get us some studio time in their studio, East Street Studios, over in Westfield, and
donated time.
Yep. Yeah. And so, yeah, we were very, very lucky and privileged to be able to go record in that space. It's awesome.
So, how long did it take you guys to do this? Because you recorded two songs, right?
Right.
Yeah.
How long did it take?
Way longer than planned.
Oh, why?
Because I think we had assumed, yeah, we'll get in there and we'll knock it out in like a couple of nights. And I think the two nights turned into like three, and oh, well, let's revisit it next week. And then, you know, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth night.
Who was the most annoying person to record? My vote's for Brad. My vocals aren't right.
No comment. No comment.
Hey, Maren should answer that because
I have
she's
no
more
comments.
Oh, what happened? You got to tell the story, Maren, because you were there.
No, I can tell one story of just like my kids. Hey, guys, you know, I just got to duck into the studio and just lay some parts down. I'm just going to run in and run out. And then
7 hours later, 3 days later.
It was a school night, and my kids, I looked down at my clock and it was 10:15. I'm like,
oh,
I have got to go. So yes, recording takes a long time. So when we say they donated studio time, they donated lots of time. And that's, I can't understate how generous Crew was to give us all that time.
Absolutely.
It's hard to sing about joy when you're singing it through clenched teeth.
Joy.
So here's a question I have for you guys. I know that you just quote unquote arranged these songs, but there's still a whole bridge. There's some musical things that you did to it. How does one write even a little bit of a song? Do you start with the lyrics? Do you add a melody? Like, how did you write the bridge for Joy to the World, for example, either of you guys?
Well, for Joy to the World, you know, because I had picked that song, I was like, okay, does this song need anything? It didn't, but I was like, for me, I think it just goes into the explanation of why I chose the song is, you know, as I listen to Joy to the World, and it's super familiar to all of us, to me, it's a song that expresses a lot of what we talk about here at Grace, the six broken places, that Jesus comes to repair not just mankind's relationship with God, but all of creation. So for me, I was like, what could I add to this song that expresses that? And that's why I came up with the bridge, really. That, for me, was the thing that tied it together to say, okay, this is creation, it waits no more. Our King Christ is born, Son of God, Son of Man. Desire of nations come. A rescue has begun, a thrill of hope across the land. I was like, okay, I want to take all of these verses and kind of tie them back together to the fact that Jesus came to redeem not just man and womankind, but all of creation. And that's what the song is.
Can we play a few bars?
Cool.
Well, the whole thing? That's just a music thing,
while
right?
We,
play a few bars.
Yeah, while we play the whole thing, Brad, I don't know that a lot of our listeners know that you have a background in writing. Could you tell us a little bit about your background? It's a really strong song. And to me, as a musician, I hear, oh my goodness, Brad's a writer.
Did we just become best friends?
I thought we became best friends like 4 months ago, but
yeah,
that was just me.
Yeah. Settle
for
down,
those
guys.
Wondering, Brad, down. Brad has a series of historical romance novellas that he wrote.
Yeah,
when you say writer, it just makes me think of like Maggie, that's who's awesome. A writer of books, but yeah.
Let's not
songwriter.
Confuse Brad's writing
songwriter.
With author Maggie Johnson.
Sorry, America. Sorry, Grace Church. Songwriter is what I meant. Please tell us about your background.
Yeah, I spent like 13 years in Nashville in a couple of Christian rock bands touring around and did a lot of writing even for one of your favorite genres, country music.
Oh, that's so not true, listeners. But again, Brad and I are best friends.
But yeah, so and that's always been something that's been on my heart ever since I came to Grace and felt like God was telling me like, okay, yeah, hey, you're going to use this thing that I put in you again. So this seemed like a great opportunity. And when Maren came, she's a songwriter herself, super gifted. We love having her here and has started a songwriting group that I'm a part of here at Grace. This felt like a really good way to kind of like kickstart some of that again. So,
what about you, Will? Have you done songwriting in the past?
Oh, yes, he has.
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, yes, he has.
Come on.
I got the proof.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just been a personal thing that I enjoy writing worship songs, and I have a CD that I'm not very proud of that I put out in college.
It's available in the bookstore.
That's available in the bookstore.
It is
so
indeed.
I did not know that.
Proud at least.
Unfortunately.
Beardless Will.
Right.
That's what the CD is called.
That's called. It's true. It's true. I'd like to get back into it, and I was very excited when Maren started her songwriting group, and I'm very excited to be a part of that and to see what God has for us here at Grace. I think, as Brad mentioned before, Grace has a very unique voice, and I'm excited to be a part of exploring what that is.
Cool. Well, let's take a listen to some of these tunes.
Joy to the
I dig it.
Joy to
this is what we refer to as a round in music.
This part is fun for me to hear what happened in like post-production. Like,
no wonder it took you guys so long. You guys just talking over each other.
Yeah, it didn't sound like that when we laid these vocal tracks down. So when I heard the finished product, I was
no,
like,
I think
whoa.
Literally,
wow.
You came in and I said, hey, can you just sing the exact same thing I sang? And then I had Vernon Piercy, yeah. Who's one of our volunteer worship leaders here at 146. Sing the same thing, and then Will sang the same thing, and then Will, I think, and I just jokingly said, hey, this could almost be like a round. Joy to the world, joy to the world. And then we ended up actually doing that.
Like, oh, so all the different parts were recorded separately. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you didn't, I'm imagining like you guys all on risers, like.
No, I can't say there was one part where we were surrounding a room mic,
oh,
where
yeah.
there were, let's see, Lauren Russell was there, Ashley Piercy, yeah. Vernon. Will,
Dave Fackler.
Thanks for the invite,
Kendra.
Guys. I lead worship in North Indy sometimes. Thanks for the invite.
I just
we
figured
all
you were
know you
busy
like
with the
to
Tyler
sing
Bender
by yourself.
Band.
Yeah. I was in show choir in high school. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah.
That was a total joke. Please don't invite me.
It's a sweet guitar part right there.
And
who was on guitar?
Will Johnson.
Oh, yeah?
That guitar part.
Nice.
Yeah. Can I give a shout out to some of the other people that
no.
like?
No, we don't allow shout outs here.
Well, we already mentioned Isaac Watts. Who else are we talking about?
It's your time, Brad. You can
well,
do whatever you want.
Josh Piercy played drums on both
yes.
of these tracks.
Right on.
Josh is a monster. Dave Fackler played keys. Will played electric guitar. Scott Naylor on electric guitar. Ben Sanborn on bass. And Maren also already mentioned all the vocalists, but I think that's it.
And Ben engineered the thing, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
He and Dave.
Yeah, Ben
split.
And Dave.
Yep.
And you said this weekend that these are available for, on the video, you said that these are available for download. Is that true
yeah.
now or will be?
No, it is true. If you go to gracechurch.us/Christmas.
You don't have to say forward part.
Do I not?
No, just slash. We got it.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
You don't have to say the forward part.
Because
it's like, do I type
Christmas.
In forward slash? What am I doing?
If you just go to slash. HTTP well,
isn't
colon
like,
backslash backslash.
Yeah, but why would you do backsplash?
Backsplash? Only in my kitchen.
I was
going to
say, that goes in the kitchen.
The World Wide Web dot.
So, yeah, they're available on gracechurch.us/Christmas.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm.
Cool.
I have to download those. Listen to them while I'm driving to church.
Do it.
Great. So we can move on, right?
I was just dancing. Wait, here comes the bridge, right?
No. This
oh, no.
Is,
we
this
already missed it.
Yeah, we missed the bridge.
Yeah. Shoot. That was my favorite part.
Did you guys count how many times he said joy?
No, it's got to be a lot.
Yeah. And you guys, are we singing these songs every week leading up to Christmas?
I think we've tried to rotate them into the campus repertoire. Like, we played it in 146th Street this weekend.
And we did also in Fisher's.
Yeah, and I think North Indy's going to do it next weekend. And then Will's Song Preparing Room we're doing this weekend. And I think Fisher's.
We cool. as well, yeah.
So, Will, the next song, Prepare Him Room, you want to tell us, set us up a little bit for that? What do we need to know?
Yeah, I mean, it started, Brad mentioned earlier, with him hearing about Maggie's devotional and texting me and saying, like, man, we should write a song about this. And the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, I mean, we need to. And I just kept thinking, maybe it doesn't need to be its own song. And so then we started toying around with the idea of doing our own arrangement of some Christmas tunes. And I got the idea to put a bridge in O Come All Ye Faithful. And to me, that it's a perfect setting for this bridge, this idea of preparing him room, because the song starts with, O come all ye faithful, come to Bethlehem, come adore him, and ends with this, like, this idea of, yea, Lord, we greet thee. Like, we're prepared for you. We're prepared for you entering into this world in our hearts. So then I just took this idea of preparing him room and wrote a bridge around it, playing off the chorus of O come all ye faithful. So, O come adore, unbended knee, from lowly manger comes the Prince of Peace. O earth, receive your newborn king. Emmanuel is born to you. Let every heart prepare him room.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's cool.
Let's take a listen.
Started to occur to me, and I'm a huge fan. You sound a little bit like Ben Folds sometimes. That's a good thing.
There are worse people that you could have said. I'll take it.
You know who you sound like? You sound like Weird Al Yankovic.
Now I'm offended.
Not true.
I don't know if you noticed, though, at the beginning of the song, there's some bells because it's a Christmas song. So we had to have...
That was my first, like, question as a musician. I know the answer, but the first time I heard it, I'm like, they did not get real bells for this. Yeah, they get real bells.
That was my question, too. Did you?
No, we did not.
Things with technology these days.
Those are MIDI sounds. Yeah.
You're forward slashing.
You can put photos in the cloud. You can synthesize bells.
Forward slash bells.
Actually, that's not even me singing. That's all MIDI.
Is this your bridge?
Yes.
Emmanuel is born to you. Let every heart
love that.
How quickly did that come together? Because I first heard this when we just musicians were planning for Christmas, and we were up in the choir room, and you just kind of played us a little kind of snapshot of what you had in mind, and it seemed so effortless. It just flowed, and we were all kind of shaking our heads like, well, of course, yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, it actually came really fast, and I think some of the better songs that I've written, that's been the case. It was really just kind of a God thing where I had just a simple idea for something, and the melodies and the lyrics, the chords just kind of form quickly around it.
Awesome.
Oh,
So, Will, yeah. Are you and Maggie taking this on the road?
Have we mentioned the fact that they're married?
Will and Maggie are married.
What?
This
I don't
song,
know if we've actually brought that up yet.
I thought that was a given, like people knew it. But maybe.
People actually don't. It's funny. I'm trying to remember. A couple weeks ago, even, Maggie was somewhere, and somebody said something to her about, like, oh, do you know the Fishers worship leader? And she was like,
oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, I'm married to him.
Yeah. I know him quite well.
My husband, yeah. Oh, wait, you should turn this part up and hear the high harmony.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh,
is this when you had to disappoint your kids?
Actually, no. So I think the idea came that day, but then I had to come back to the studio like a whole week later actually lay it down. Sans kids, like without the kids. But they're used to it. They've got a musician for a mom.
So how long were you guys in the studio?
Cumulatively. I mean, it was probably, I don't know, 30 hours?
Mm, okay. Over the course of a week?
Yeah, 2 weeks? Well, 2.5 weeks?
Yeah, 2.5 weeks.
And that, yeah. Well, Thanksgiving was in there, so yeah.
we'd take a break and then...
Will, you're hot off becoming a fresh dad.
Oh my goodness.
That is the weirdest way I've ever heard that.
Such a fresh dad.
Yeah, you're a fresh dad, man. You got a little baby at home. How did that go over? Hey, I got to go to the studio for 30 straight hours.
Yeah.
It was broken up. There were some long, you know, maybe 6 or 7 hour mm-hmm. sessions at a time. But yeah, Maggie was super understanding. And, you know, Penny just cries when I hold her anyway, so.
Aww.
I don't believe it.
Here come the bells.
I refuse to believe that those are not real. So in my imagination, there's a massive Santa Claus, giant beard, just like
Salvation Army
sweat
guy.
Pouring off his forehead, and he's
massive
just hitting
those. Massive Santa Claus preparing him room,
yeah.
coming
yeah.
to adore him. I
Christmas.
Like that.
It's
good
the
picture.
Bell ringer at Kroger.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. He's just standing there with the bell. Guys,
really strong arrangements,
yeah,
guys.
Thank you for sharing that. And can you tell us again where people can find this and download?
Brad, let me take this.
Yeah. Will say it this time.
It's gracechurch.us/Christmas.
Yeah. And you can download these tunes. You can find service hours for all of our campus locations and join us for Christmas. And we'll be singing these songs, like the guy said, all month long at different campuses. So hope you enjoy them. Maybe you can sing along. I don't know if you've ever heard these songs before, but maybe you can learn the words and sing along by the time you get to service. Guys, thanks for joining us. It was a pleasure getting to talk about this, and I can't wait to go pump this in my car. Is pump the right word? Bump. I can't wait to go bump this
bump
in the car.
Bump it. Bump it.
Slash this in yeah.
It would be really, really poignant.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's all we got. It was a jam-packed episode. Thanks for listening to Between Sundays. Maren, do you want to send us out?
I do. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
And we will see you on the other side of Sunday. Take care.